You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. I am Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our telephone number, and you can always email me anytime, day or night, Monday through Monday, dmlive at breadboxmedia.com. So what shall we talk about today? What's on your mind today? Jennifer was talking a little bit before we got on about greeting the summer. How do we reset our minds and our action? How do we get ready for the summertime? How do we switch over from pretty much regimented mode to having to come up with all these different things to deal with summer if you have a child or if you have children? That really, really presents even a greater challenge. And also, in no matter where you're at, summer always brings with it that idea, that letdown, like, okay, all right, we should be like, you know, we should be having a great time here. And then, you know, for those of us who are no longer children, things don't change. We don't just get to go out and climb trees, or can we? So I want to begin the summer. We're not at the harvest. We're planting the seeds for the harvest. So let's take a look at some mindsets that we can do. We kind of came out of the winter talking about depression, talking about anxiety, all these things that won't go away in the summer. For those of you who have seasonal affective disorder, I'm going to take a moment aside here and say that many of you will feel a lift in the summer times, in the summer months. However, if you have seasonal affective disorder, you may not. It is a little bit unusual, a little bit, for me, it's a little hard to grasp for the scientists who deal with light and sleep and variation and biochemistry. It's right as rain to them. But all the adjusting of the diurnal clocks and the just everything we have to go through and how our pineal gland works in our heads, that is a lot for me. So what happens sometimes is there are some people, for whatever reason, because it's not as simple as daylight versus non-daylight, although that is the platform in which seasonal affective disorder is discovered, felt, and dealt with. Lots of people in the summertime, actually, that's when they have their low point. So we don't really have all the answers for that. It has a lot to do with your place on the planet, what's going on in your life, all kinds of things. Kind of a seasonal type, feelings that come up during any, it can be anything. And as we've already seen through all this time we've been talking, there's so many different things that can cause so many different things that look like other things that we just want to be like, put our head in an Alice in Wonderland book and forget it all. So why not? Well, I'm going to say, why not? Let's take a look at how can we go from a place of lack to a place of abundance. Yesterday, I was talking about this, the concept, the idea of the moral injury. And I think it's a wonderful and beautiful place to go to, a moral injury. And I want to talk a little bit about that before we get into ways to nurture your viewpoint of abundance and shrink your viewpoint of lack. Because we are 24/7 pounded in our head, lack, 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 period. We log on and we just heard on the news that Facebook is somehow connecting our dots so that every single thing we do, every view we have, everything is linked. so that we are, if we, let's say we're interested in vitamin D, all of a sudden we're getting ads for the best vitamin D for seasonal affective disorder, osteoporosis, ADHD, whatever vitamin D has been linked to in studies, you're going to get something handpicked and fine-tuned to you so that you'll buy something. And the only way you're going to ever buy anything is out of a place of lack, not out of a place of abundance. When you have everything filled for you, you don't think about buying anything unless you have the lack mentality. And we all have the lack mentality. We must, on the one hand, because as human beings, we always end up in a state of lack in some way or another. We're born into a state of lack. Our bodies subsist on a state of lack because we have to keep feeling the lack and then doing something to gain the abundance. So as a child, as a baby, you come out of the womb and you're doing your cry. You need to cry. It's not because you're sad or that you've sinned or anything. That's how your lungs start to expand. You have to cry. However, short order, you have to eat. And you get hungry. And then as a child, you get filled. And then you're fine. You play until you get hungry again. And you sleep until you need to awaken. And then you sleep again. A very, very short order, we say, not having any of that. We're going to put our hand over all of your natural functions. We are going to tell you when to sleep, when to eat, when to do this, when to do that. And you must always go on a feeling of lack. So how do we change that around? Well, this idea of moral injury, I want to address it a little bit before we get into the lighter, brighter, happier side of abundance. The idea of moral injury, they were talking, the article was about post-traumatic stress disorder, usually in soldiers. They were actually showcasing the soldiers, two particular soldiers from the Afghanistan conflict and war. But the idea was that they were separating out, which still, thank God, they're doing it, that they're at least putting some value on it, but separating out moral injury from post-traumatic stress disorder, which I can't do in my own head. To me, one goes with the other. You rarely have a post-traumatic stress without a moral injury. Now, sure, you could be walking along a sidewalk and a building can fall. That could give you post-traumatic stress, just the physical act or of a natural disaster. However, the moral injury, when it has to do with other people, there's usually a moral injury in there somewhere. Either you're witnessing someone perpetrating a moral injury on someone else, or you are actually involved in it yourself. And those are very, very difficult to get over. But I want to talk a little bit about the moral injury, because a lot of us get confused when we talk about forgiveness. And we think that means forgetting. And when someone you love and you trusted betrays you, you will receive a moral injury. They have given you a moral injury. Now, it doesn't mean that you haven't given your own moral injuries. That's kind of how we hurt each other, right? That's what happens. But I really want to drive that home. We get confused about what it means to forgive. Forgiveness is an act. Forgiveness is an act of will. If you have that particular constitution or some supernatural intervention, you may be lifted and never think about it again. Never be hurt when you think about it again. Doesn't open that wound. As we said yesterday, the quote that I found a long time ago, I can't give it to you right now because I don't know where I found it, but it was by Elie Wiesel, the famous Holocaust, it's escaping me the name of the organization, but he was the one who was wanted to bring the perpetrators to justice, no matter how far, that we don't forget, that we keep going back, that we keep remembering what man would do to man. And so this is, you know, he's an amazing person. But what he said is, time does not heal all wounds. It buries them in very shallow graves. And most of us who have forgiven, when we get slightly pricked on our skin, our emotional skin, we can be very triggered to have a very strong reaction. Doesn't mean you didn't forgive. It just means that you got hurt. So remember that. I want you to remember that. But I want to today look at, how do we turn this feeling of lack, but I was hurt, but I was stolen from, I was betrayed, or I don't have enough money, or my children don't have the clothes they need, or the food that we have isn't what I would like. How do you turn that into abundance? Well, you can. It's the loaves and fishes of your life. You can turn that into abundance. It doesn't mean that you don't strive for better. You do. It doesn't mean that you don't feel like, my gosh, really? Potatoes again? I mean, I've been there myself. Pasta. I found every single possible way to, luckily I liked pasta, to make pasta morning, noon, and night. So, you know, we have these ways, or how many of us have survived on ramen, you know, when it was 25 cents a pack, and fed our families on ramen. I know I did for a while. So how do we turn this around a little bit? We'll get to that on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. Walking this road together. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can text, or you can call 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. So how do we go from thinking about moral injury and all the hurts and the hang-ups and the problems and the habits we have that we can't break, and we're looking ourselves in the mirror and we don't like this, we don't like that. We're just taught. We are taught by not just our parents. We are taught by the world to hate ourselves, to want something different all the time, to think in terms of fear-based. You're not going to have enough. It's going to run out. And then if you have enough, it's going to be taken away, and no one will want you. No one will love you. No one will give you food. You're going to be dejected, rejected. It's really, you know, it's a testimony to our amazing resilience and our beauty and our abilities to rise above, that we can survive this, and not just survive, but thrive in a world that wants to constantly, from every inside and out, wants to occupy you, package you, keep you spending, then keep you in fear, keep you from talking to each other, to keep you, just keep you in a stranglehold. And I know that sounds, oh gosh, that's really bad, but look at it the other way. Now let's flip it over. Flip it over. Look at it from its underside. Look at it from the other side. Aren't you pretty resilient? Aren't you pretty amazing? That you get up, you brush your teeth, you take a shower, you tend to your kids, you walk your dog, you feed your animals, you open the window and you see birds. Somewhere, no matter where you are, you will find a bird. Somewhere. And if you don't find a bird, you can find a snail. You can find a butterfly. You can find a bud coming up. You can find some grass. Now, weirdly, I tell you, it just, it does bother me, and I have to learn for it not to bother me. An example here, California, just several months ago, the drought. People were encouraged to report their neighbors, to report on their neighbors. If your neighbor felt that you were using too much water, secretly and anonymously report them, because we are in this horrible drought. Now, I'm driving through the hills of Southern California and I see thousands, and I'm not kidding, in just less than a quarter mile, hundreds, and maybe within a mile, thousands of brand new single family homes with yards, with parks, with water being built, at least 4 or 5 bedrooms. So what's that? What's happening there? And yet I was out yesterday by a beachside community, which could easily just have sand or could have rocks or something. But there's an area in front of this really darling little beach house that had a sidewalk and then had a little grass and a few palm trees. And then all of a sudden, the grass changed. I looked down and I thought, I wonder why this grass changed. Because it was plastic. Because for a while, people were selling people in an instant of, we have a drought. And then all of a sudden, rip up your yards. We'll come in, we'll rip up your yard, and we'll put in plastic grass. Now, who doesn't see a problem with plastic grass? I mean, do you remember those plastic vinyl car tops they used to have on great big old cars? They're real popular for a long time. What happened to them in the sun? They faded, they rotted, they got brittle. So what's going to happen to this grass? And what's happening underneath the grass? Because it doesn't breathe. I mean, it really is a disaster. It's a disaster. Now, it's not all over the place, but the idea is that in 1 second, you get people from swimming in their swimming pools to reporting on their neighbors because of a drought. And we have a drought. However, it's been pouring here for, not right now, but it has been actually quite wet this winter. And you don't hear a thing about it anymore. But everybody's water bills went up. But you don't. Did that make more water? No, it just made you pay more. Where is the water? You know, did that buy more water from the sky? Did it buy more water from neighboring states? No, it was just that. That's what they do. That's what they do. In our own lives, that same thing happens all the time. In an instant, in one commercial, you can go from watching a great movie. Let's say you're watching a fun movie with your kids, and you go and you get your popcorn, and you're munching your popcorn, and while about third fistful of popcorn into your mouth, you see some ad for, you know, someone who's clutching their chest and falling down on the floor. And pretty soon your eyes are big and now you're worried. You're worried about you, you're worried about your kids, you're worried about the example you're giving, you're worried about everything. And then you're thinking, maybe I better go, I better call that number, I better go find a book on health. And pretty soon you're sucked in. It doesn't take much for us. It doesn't. Just train a dog. I mean, we are biochemical beings. We're way more than dogs, but just train a dog and you'll see. Some of them are more resistant than others, but you're going to find something for everybody. And the powers that be out there, being Facebook, Google, they don't have to do much. They don't have to do anything. The people don't have to do anything. It's all algorithmic. All you have to do is click. And once you click, then they know what you like. And they, meaning they're not even at that point, not even people, it's an algorithmic thing. So you get funneled over here, over here, over here. And pretty soon you start seeing things that are reminiscent of what you may have liked, what you may have Googled, what you may have, just think of anything that you've done. And look at something a little out of character. Look at something a little out of character that you might look at. And then pretty soon you're noticing those little side ads, and they're like about that. And it's like, where did that come from? Well, it came from someplace very well designed. So let's go to abundance then. How do we go in this world? Well, see how amazingly resilient we are. How do we do it? We do it. And one thing we do is we go to the inner universe before we went to the outer universe, because it was something that we didn't know as a people. We are very tied to the earth. We are very tied to our bodily functions. We are very tied to small little tribes for protection. We are very tied to clean water. We were very tied to things because there wasn't a lot of interfacing. There weren't a lot of middlemen between waking up in the morning and feeding yourself and your family and or your tribe, getting water and protecting your animals. That was pretty much that. And so as we looked outward, we had more ability to look outward. Now we're being attacked by these airwaves. And so we have to go more inward now. We've lost some of the inwardness. We've lost some of the ability to rely on ourselves. So what we have to do first is, number one, accept that whatever we may have is enough. If you're listening to this program, you probably have way more than enough. I have way more than enough. Now, you might be in threat of losing it. Perhaps you've only got a few more months to live in your house because it's being foreclosed. But accept what you have is enough. For this moment, what I have is enough. And not and enough in a happy way. A roof over my head, air to breathe, no imminent danger, water to drink, and food to eat. That is more than enough. And once you begin that, you do not have to, although it really does help. And I'll tell you on the next program, the next segment, some little tricks and things you can do, ways to use prayer that will help you increase gratitude. However, you will by default, once you start just that little exercise of beginning to accept that whatever we have, in whatsoever way we find ourselves, I'll find the biblical quote, I think it's Philippians, that therein is enough, that it's enough. And once you even know that and you begin to see that, this is wonderful. I've got a roof over my head. Great. I've got water. This is good. Once you start that, gratitude starts seeping in, just like fear starts seeping in when you see someone on a television clutching their chest and falling to the floor and nobody there to get them and everything's a mess. Well, when you start having the commercial in your mind, the television in your mind, the screen in your mind, the Facebook in your mind, be one of, wow, look what I have. Sunshine over my head. I heard a bird. I drank water. I'm breathing. That will engender, that will cause to rise up gratitude. The world doesn't want you to be grateful. They say be grateful, but only be grateful if you're dependent on being a consumer. Then you can be grateful. But other than that, be grateful that you can shop more. So that's a little cynical, I know, and it's a little short-sighted. Very tongue-in-cheek. But you have to understand that the tiny seeds will grow great trees. Big fruit. So when we begin to experience that gratitude that just comes as a default to accepting that what we have is enough, then all of a sudden, over time, we start seeing life in abundance rather than lack. So we'll get into the details on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle. You are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. What do you recall during your day? What do you think? What do you feel? Do you live in a spirit of thankfulness, or do you live in a spirit of lack? Are you looking up, or are you looking down? Are you bent over? Is your neck churned to the ground? Is your neck craned to the sky? There is something about a posture. There's lots of study about actually just your physical posture and what it does to your mood. And now, interestingly enough, there are many studies out that just the very act of craning your neck downward or letting your head bow to look at and to text or to do an iPad or maybe a laptop, but especially on your phone and your children, the same thing. You are physiologically, biochemically giving yourself a signal of submission and depression and dejection. Now, you may not feel it. You may laugh at whatever came across your text or came on your screen, but you are literally, your body is fighting against what your eyes are seeing. They're incongruent. You are churning out chemicals of submission just in that posture. Now, we know this. Actors have known this from the beginning of time. I took an acting class back in like my first year of college, and our book was Acting is Believing. But they had a big old section on posturing and how they make people look either through makeup and through posture, old, tired, dejected, or happy and confident and youthful. And it doesn't matter how old the person is. You can convey the idea. And if you're a good enough actor, you can really convey the idea. But you cannot have, just like you cannot have someone, a while back they had, I think it was hair coloring commercials where they had a woman who was maybe 22 years old and looked completely happy and good straight posture and looking all awesome. And then they had her in gray hair. Like, yeah, you can go from this to this. Well, I would take that because you're not fooling anybody. But you give somebody a hump down look, you can have someone who's 40 years old and they can look 70. It is really true. So why am I telling you this? Because I don't really care how you begin to attack it. Let's just attack it. That's a really good thing. Let's just attack it. So if you begin with a posture, if you begin with some good eating, if you begin with one day where you go outside and you look at that one tree in your housing project, and you look at that one tree, and in that one tree, there's one bird, and you say, thank you, hey, little bird, and you talk to the bird like you're three. The bird doesn't care if it's in a housing project or if it's on Bill Gates' estate, as long as it is in a tree or that it's looking for its little worms, as long as it's got some worms. And it will do the best it can. You put that bird in a cage, won't do as good, but it'll still just be a bird as much as it can be. So let's get out of our cages and let's start looking at some of this. Let's start very simply with accepting that whatever you have is enough. For today, just for today, everything I have is enough. Everything that I have is enough. I have enough time. I have enough air. I have enough water. I have enough eyesight that I can see the sky. Now, if you don't have eyesight, you don't have eyesight. I have a friend who does not have eyesight now. She had eyesight her whole life. Now she doesn't have eyesight. And she went through some really hard times, very down, very dejected, feeling very helpless, of course, hopeless, of course. All that's understandable. However, after a period of mourning the loss of her sight, mourning the loss of her part of her body, that when you have a surgery, a little aside here, mourn the loss of that part because you gave, it's gone. That part of you that was uniquely you with your DNA is gone. Whether it's your uterus, whether it's your leg, whether it's a finger, whether it is even part of your nose, whatever it is. mourn it, your spleen. We don't want to lose your spleen, but if you had to lose your spleen, you know, you mourn it. And so, you know, because it's a part of you, and a part of you now is missing, a part of you that you were born with and you could have died with, but you didn't because you live life the way you live it. So, you know, accidents happen, all kinds of stuff. And we say there's no accidents. We say there's nothing random. Well, you know, that can go to a certain point. And the reality is that things do happen. And how it's all sorted out in the long run, further along, we will know all about it, as the good song says. So right now, we want to be able to accept that whatever we have is enough. And doing that just for the second, you will have already, it's like, you know, let's say you want to start a new exercise program. You would have already started the gratitude equivalent of 15 sit-ups. That's it. You might feel a little sore the next day. In this realm, you might wake up even looking at your lack more tomorrow because that force wants you to stay down. You might go, oh gosh, what was I thinking? Yeah, really, look at this. No, this is breaking, that's breaking. I can't afford a car. I can't afford a house. I don't know where I'm going to go. All that's natural and normal. But if you take a moment and just remember, even if you're not feeling it, look at that bird, look at that sky. So we have, of course, our spiritual side that can help us out in a lot of things. I read to you yesterday the Canticle of Zechariah, or from the Canticle of Zechariah. And I really got this from June. I think it's June's. Yes, June's Magnificat this year. And it's at the little last page that folds out. And it says, in the tender compassion of our God, the dawn from on high shall break upon us to shine on those who dwell in darkness and the shadow of death, and to guide our feet in the way of peace. Glory be to the Father, to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and will be forever. Amen. God is a compassionate God. And his light will dawn on you. So, in that Canticle of Zechariah, we can also look at the fact that the praise is there. He promised to show mercy to our fathers and to remember his holy covenant. So, he's promised he's going to come through. You need to do your part. You need to withdraw from that which brings you down, and you need to hydrate that which will lift you up. A wise priest once said that when people are very down or they're very dejected, he moves them away from the Psalms that outlines how bad things are. And he moves them into the Psalms that uplift and bring up the heart and bring up the chest and bring up the chin and bring up the eyes. He leads them to those Psalms. So I want you to think about that and find some Psalms, find a Psalm that gives you that kind of uplifting. And I just happen to have one right here. Psalm 148 is a good one. Lord God, you have made heaven and earth by your great might. With your outstretched arm, nothing is impossible for you. Our glory is to mirror back in loving praise to the God who made us the beauty we glimpse dimly in all that comes from his hand. So here's 148. Praise the Lord from the earth, sea creatures and all oceans, fire and hail, snow and mist, stormy winds that obey his word, all mountains and hills, all fruit trees and cedars, beast, wild and tame, reptiles and birds on the wing, all earth's kings and peoples, earth's princes and rulers, young men and maidens, old men together with children, let them praise the name of the Lord, for he alone is exalted. The splendor of his name reaches beyond heaven and earth. He exalts the strength of his people. He is the praise of all the saints, of the sons of Israel, of the people to whom he comes close. So, he is the sun. He is the light. And when we talk to him as a person who's supposed to give us stuff and we go, well, where are you? Where are you? That's understandable. And we guess we're supposed to do that. And we're supposed to go on anyway. But again, if we accept that whatever we have is enough, then we are going to begin the gratitude. So what we'll go back to Lent. If you want to look at the archive podcast from back in Lent, one of the exercises in my podcast in Lent was to, before you even open your eyes or when you open your eyes, say, I praise you. I praise your name. I praise everything you've ever done everything you've ever done to get me to this point. So no matter how I've been ambushed, whatever's happened in my life, I'm here right now and I'm giving you praise. And that will begin to set a tone. What you have to understand, and we'll get into this on the other side of the break, if what you're doing isn't working, the old joke, well, how's that working for you? If what you're doing, what you have been doing, your habit tends to bring down your face, bring down your posture, bring down your feelings, bring down your sense of hope, then it's time to change it. And it's simple, but not that easy. We'll tell you how to do it on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can text or call. You can also email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com to get previous archives. So it's your attitude. You've heard that a lot. And we get these little cliches, attitude of gratitude. And sometimes that makes some people I know kind of snarly. They feel very put upon and sarcastic, like it's such a little snap of the fingers. And I get that. I totally understand that feeling. So let's not go there. Let's not have those little cliches in our heads from people that are saying it from their brand new Mercedes or whatever is they're running by with their picnic baskets. How about the rest of us? How about us, all of us who the other day my car was just rattling away and I'm trying to put the window down. And then all of a sudden my window, because I love my car, but it is getting older and I love it. I don't want to give it up because I love it. I like the way it rides. I like the way the seat feels. I like it. And also I get stuck and I don't want to give that up. But so it's not coming back up. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? My dog's in the car. And, you know, I'm thinking about that. Then I realize I hear this rattle and I think, oh my gosh, I have to get this in. And it's just like these one little things after another. And it's those times where but occasionally I'm reminded, you know, hey, practice some of this stuff too. Practice it now. Thank you, God. Thank you that I'm sitting in this car right now. Thank you that I have wheels. Thank you that I'm rolling. Thank you that while I'm doing it, it's not pouring rain. Thank you that the sun's out. Thank you that it's beautiful. Thank you that I'm not somewhere else right now. Thank you, I'm right here. Thank you. Thank you. And so when you do that, it does lighten you. And if you take just a moment, you can actually feel it in your body. So if what you're doing isn't working for you, just try something else. Try today little things like lifting your head up from your phone. Maybe put your phone way up high level or even a little bit higher so your eyes have to reach up. It won't be comfortable, but just maybe for a few minutes. But always ask yourself, does it have to be either or? Does it have to be this or that? Do I have to be down or do I have to be elated? How about both and? How about all the above? How about the spectrum? A color isn't always the most vivid part of the spectrum. A color has more or less of other colors in it and more or less depth or brightness or You know, you just take a look. Take a look. You have to know that you can train your mind. And it doesn't have to be that difficult. As I said, just understanding that where you are, what you're doing right now is enough. You're already doing 5 gratitude push-ups, 15 gratitude sit-ups. You're already doing it. You're allowing it to happen within you. You're not just sitting on the couch where you've always been. So you have to understand that part of you getting better in all ways, because the physiology will follow, and sometimes the physiology begins the process. That's why a lot of times with in anything, depression or anxiety, get moving. Now, do you have to go out and buy brand new shoes and go join a gym or go join a swim club? No. You can choose to park your car further in the parking lot and walk quickly. Swing your arms to the store and walk quickly back. There, what's the difference between that walk and driving 20 miles to a club and getting on a treadmill and getting back off? Because you can do that multiple times a day. You can do that going up to your kitchen. You can do that anywhere you want. We're just tricked into thinking that we can't do it unless we actually go to that consumer place, pay our money, and go. And how many of us out there, I will raise my hand, have purchased things like treadmills or like YMCA memberships, and you don't use them that much? So when we look at, I'm going to read Robert J. Wicks. I like going back to him. He has the book Spiritual Resilience, 30 Days to Refresh Your Soul. Spiritual Resilience, 30 Days to Refresh Your Soul. One of his, in his introduction, he talks about spiritual resilience is not simply about recovering from adversity. It is about bouncing back in a way that deeper knowledge of both God and self may result. And his tagline is, be clear and be not afraid. With the right guidance during difficult times and periods of confusion, pain, and stress, we have a unique opportunity to nurture our relationship with God and enable it to grow in surprising ways. So his first sentence, spiritual resilience is not simply about recovering from adversity. It is about bouncing back in a way that deeper knowledge of both God and self may result. Now, see how I get tongue-tied on that sentence even? Not because it's a sentence I can't get my mind around, but because it's so unusual to read those as the next steps that that it feels almost unnatural. It's like I should be expecting a G and a G chord to come next, and it's an A sharp. So one reason it feels unnatural, because we're talking about if you do this, the result will be. In other words, we're looking at it from the other side. We're looking at it from the bottom up or the up down. We're not looking at it the way we're used to, where that if we just keep that knowledge going and we just force ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper into thought, then we will somehow come to that realization that we need to be grateful. In other words, try the other one first, and the result will be a deeper knowledge of God, not a greater, a deeper knowledge of God and a deeper knowledge of self. It just results from that. This is what, if we can just take a minute and breathe this in, because it's an inspiration. And inspire is also another word for breathe in. That's inspire. Expire is to breathe out. So inspire, you're inspired. Now, use your visualization. If, as I love to do, because it always gives me some feeling, even when I'm feeling like really badly, when I think about Our Lady, when I think about Our Lady of Guadalupe, especially for me, but all incarnations of Mary, all forms of Mary have some kind of flowers and roses attached to it. So I think of it in terms of the hydration of the flower, of the little shoot coming up from the ground inside of me, inside of my mind, inside of my heart, inside of somebody I'm praying for, that it comes up as the shoot and then it starts to grow. And as it reaches that, it feels that sun and the dew, you can just smell it. You can smell the wet earth. You can smell the sun coming down. You can smell the dew on the leaves. And then you start seeing those green leaves and they catch the dew. And then those that they roll down into the stem, and the stem and the stalk starts to grow, and little thorns come around as protection. So you want those thorns around the outside as protection, because you're protecting that young, tender shoot. And as it grows and grows and grows and grows, and it has to go through its hard times, or you will not get a beautiful rose. So it has to go through freezing and drought conditions and lots of heat and lots of sun and then lots of cold, and then repeat the cycle. It has to do that. But what comes out? A beautiful fragrant. I have smelled some roses that will knock your socks off. You go to the store, you're not going to smell that, because they come from someplace and they're sprayed with herbicides and this side and that side. And they come over in some big cargo plane, and you just really don't get to smell them the way that you can out of the garden. But there are some people who are growing roses that just the way that they were intended to grow. And boy, they really smell beautiful, beautifully. So part of that, though, I think about that inside of us. And you can think about that today, that as the stalk grows up inside of you, let's say it grows up through your trunk and then, or up through your stomach, and then it starts to spread out into your chest, and your heart can become the flower, or the center of your chest can become that beautiful rose. And then it goes up further into your neck and head. And you think about that as the beautiful hydrated rose that blooms, and the fragrance just is going to surround you. So keep that visualization in mind today. And every once in a while, if it's helpful for you, think on that. But if nothing else, today especially, say, what I have is enough. And this beautiful visualization I have is enough. I know what a flower is. I know what a rose is. I know what it smells like. That's going to be what I'm thinking on today. That's what I'm going to breathe in when I'm sitting at that stoplight and breathing in fumes of the diesel car in front of me. So you sing on May 30th, there was this beautiful hymn. I don't know where it is, though it just says hymn. But it says, I sing the goodness of the Lord, who filled the earth with food, who formed the creatures through the word, and then pronounced them good. Lord, how thy wonders are displayed where I turn my eyes. If I survey the ground I tread or gaze upon the sky, there's not a plant or flower below that makes thy glories known, but makes thy glories known. And clouds arise and tempests blow by order from the throne. While all that borrows life from these is ever in thy care, and everywhere that we can be, thou God art present there. Well, it's a beautiful little hymn. Beautiful hymn. And it's all about gratitude. It's looking at, there isn't one place you can look down on the ground, an ant going by that you don't want it to sting you because it's red, but an ant going by. They're making do with what they have. And though they might get, not the best environment, that where they're out in some desert place where they can have ant hills that go up to the sky, they do what they do. They do what they do. So remember this today, that you are not alone. You are also always surrounded by that which will make you inspire, give you life, let you look up and not hunched over down. It's around you everywhere you look. And once you begin, so begin today to say, what I have is enough. No, every time you say it, you've got 5 spiritual sit-ups going on, 5 gratitude sit-ups that are going to start after a while. They're just going to start coming up naturally. You will break the habit slowly. You'll suffocate the habit out, and you will let the good habit of gratitude grow. So I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you tomorrow. You can please email me, dmlive@redboxmedia.com. God bless, and see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.